Happy Good Friday to all of you. I want you to imagine that you were standing on the famous hill of Calvary 2,000 years ago on the morning that Jesus Christ was crucified. And I want you to imagine what you would have seen, what you would have smelled, what you would have felt, and what you would have believed. It's the morning and you've been up all night. You didn't really intend to be up all night, but that's just the way it happened. You first noticed as you went to bed that night a disturbance out on the street. So you went down to the front door and you cracked it open, and there was a mob of people out there. There were Roman soldiers in the street. And so you asked, what's going on? And you were told, Jesus of Nazareth, he's been arrested. They're taking him now to the praetorium for trial. So you close the door, and you decide you're going to get dressed quickly to go and see what would happen. And as you get dressed, your mind is racing. Now, of course, you've heard the stories of this famous Jesus of Nazareth that have circulated over the last several years. You've heard of his miracles. You heard that he fed 5,000. You heard that he walked on water. You heard that he cast out demons. You heard that he actually touched lepers. And all these stories have been circulating around, and you've heard them, and you've wondered, could it all be true? Now, it's just a matter of time, and he knew it was just a matter of time before the authorities would have their way with him. After all, he humiliated them on so many occasions, and you can only do that so many times before it comes back to get you. And there were times that he asked them questions and they didn't know what to say. And there were times that he called them names like, you brood of vipers. Well, if you want to live long, you don't do that kind of thing. And after all, over these last years, his fame has grown. Everybody's talking about Jesus. And those authorities then that want to end his life, that he humiliated, they have so much to lose. They have their careers, their wealth, their power. They are going to lose everything if Jesus becomes famous and if people start following him instead of following them. You can't expect to be a rebel forever without getting caught. Few disputed his miracles, for how could they? Far more disputed his teaching, because he taught not like everybody else that just kind of talked to be heard. He talked like he believed what he was saying. He talked with authority. He drew you in, and how he talked and what he said and the fire in his eyes and his voice, there was something about it. It's like it reached in and it grabbed your heart as you listened. And you loved what he said. You loved his teaching. Love the unlovable. Care for those who are hurting. Forgive those who sin against you. Try to be a peacemaker if you can. Live moral lives. Help the poor. No one despised Jesus for any of those things. And if Jesus had just stayed in his lane, no one would have had a problem with him at all. The problem they had was when he drifted out of his lane of upright living and morality, and he drifted into a new lane. And in that new lane, well, of course, he humiliated the religious authorities, but he also claimed to have a special relationship with God the Father. In fact, one time he said, I and the Father are one. Well, that got everybody's religious hackles up. Nobody says that. Who does he think he is? But then he said things like, I'm the Son of God. I'm the Messiah. I'm the great I am that talked to Abraham so many years ago. And everybody's jaw dropped that somebody would, with such audacity, say such things. But he did. He dared to say those things. And it was hard to hear because, in your mind as a Jew, the Messiah is supposed to come with power. He's supposed to come and liberate Israel. He's not supposed to come with a hammer and saw, the son of a carpenter. How can this be the Messiah? And you wondered. And so for 3 years, these stories have been circulating around, and you've been hearing them and hearing what he says and what he claims. And you've heard that he does strange things. He talks to Samaritans. He sits down with, well, kind of the scum of society. One of his best friends is an ex-prostitute. Well, who does that? Well, it's just down the road a little bit from Jerusalem, where his fame really went to the next level, when he raised from the dead a guy named Lazarus. And the problem with that part of the story, at least what you heard, is that nobody could say, no, you didn't, because Lazarus he was walking around. There were days that he was in Jerusalem. He was in the market. You can go and talk to him. And I wonder how many times he was asked, what was it like? What was it like to die? What was it like to come back? And nobody could dispute that Lazarus wasn't alive, because there he was walking around. And so Jesus' fame grew. But on that morning, you weren't sure what to make of Jesus still. You couldn't deny his miracles. You liked his teaching. You're a little iffy on his claims, but who else could raise the dead? Who else could heal the way he does, if not God himself? So you get ready, and you run out the door, and you shut the door and lock it behind you, and you run after the crowd. They're easy to find on their way to the Praetorium because they're making so much noise. You just follow the noise, and you made your way all the way to the Praetorium, but you got there a little bit late. You didn't get in, so you waited outside. And you're out in the courtyard, and people are talking, and they're whispering. And they're asking, do you know what's going on, and what's going to happen? And you wonder the same thing yourself. What is going to happen? After several hours, you hear the doors to the Praetorium open up, and out they drag Jesus, more dead than alive, beaten, tortured, bleeding all over the ground. And there he was, the same guy that said, I am the great I am, the Messiah, the Son of God. He's bleeding out in front of you. You're not really sure what to do exactly. You just kind of feel like, I should follow. And so they make their way from the Praetorium, and they make their way up that hill that is called Calvary. It's a famous hill. Many had been killed and crucified on that very same hill. And you follow the crowd up the hill, and you stood afar off as you watched to see what would happen. And you could hear the noise of the people. And you could hear the hammering of the nails. And you could hear the screams of the victims. And you stood to watch, to see. But you were still close enough to read the sign they put over his head, King of the Jews. And as you stand there, you're conflicted. You want to yell mercy, but you're afraid. You don't know if you really believe, but you want to. Who is this guy hanging on the cross now? You're not sure what to do. You're not even sure where to look. And so you look back over your shoulder as you stand on that hill, and there's the city of Jerusalem. There it is behind you in the early morning hours of the day, and the cooking fires are just getting going. You can see all of Jerusalem. And what dominates the landscape as you look is the temple itself. That temple where sacrifices have been made day after day for years. Now, you heard that 5 days ago, Jesus went in and trashed the place. Maybe it was just rumors. Maybe it was just gossip. You don't know. But the temple. And just beyond the temple is the east gate where 5 days ago, Jesus came riding on in, and everybody was screaming like he was the big conquering king. Right there at the east gate, the very same gate that Ezekiel said, someday the glory of the Lord will return through that gate. And you wonder, could Jesus be that glory? And then you look again at the temple, and the very presence of God is the representation for you of the temple itself. But God, who is this God? And Jesus said he was God. How could it be both? How could the presence of God be in the temple and yet Jesus say he's God? You feel torn as a Jew with the conflict going on inside of you. And as you look around there on top of the hill, you just observe who else is up there with you. There are some Roman soldiers. They're over there doing their thing. And you notice that it's a very strange scenario, very strange scene. Because there's rich there, poor, outcasts, some people you assume are his family because they keep talking to Jesus while he's on the cross. What a strange scene. And the question in your mind is this: how exactly do you kill God? As you've been up there for probably a good 3 or 4 hours, at noon that day, suddenly it was like somebody turned the switch off and the whole place goes dark. Kind of like dusk or twilight. There's an eerie silence that comes along with that. People begin to disperse, afraid of what's going to happen next. But you stay. You wait. You want to see what's going to happen. 3 hours later, it's 3 p.m. And Jesus, as you look up at that cross, he's in bad shape. You know, it's right at the end. And as you stand there, the ground begins to shake. It's an earthquake in Judea. Not that unusual. Just 50 years before, 10,000 people died in an earthquake. But right in that moment, while you're standing there, the ground is shaking, people are jumping on the ground, screams, cries from the kids over here. You look at the cross, it begins to teeter. The Roman soldiers grab the cross so it doesn't fall over. And there you stand, taking it all in. You look over here on this side, down by the cemetery, and there's weird commotion. You have no idea what's going on down there. There's like hysteria happening in all of the moment. People are yelling and running out of the temple behind you, and you can hear their screams from the hill. And there you stand and watch and wait to see what will happen next. And then in one weird, eerie moment of silence amongst all the screams and the yells and the craziness and the aftershocks from the earthquake, Jesus says, "It is finished." It's the first words you heard him say clearly from where you were. And then he slumps, dead. Like fresh kill from last night, there he is on the cross, dead. Not very many people notice because there's so many other things going on. People are wondering what to do with the earthquake. Parents are trying to find their kids. People are seeing all this commotion over at the cemetery over there and the people running out of the temple over there. But your eyes are fixed on Jesus. How can he be dead? You're hoping that another miracle happens. After all, if he can raise Lazarus from the dead, certainly he can do it to himself. And you have eyes only for Jesus. And you think to yourself, surely this is the Son of God. Imagine if you were there that afternoon. Imagine what you would have seen with your eyes. Imagine what you would have smelled. Imagine what you would have felt. But really imagine what you would have believed. So imagine if you had been there that afternoon and what you would have seen, smelled, felt, and believed. And as you looked at what we say the old rugged cross, caked with the blood of Jesus Christ, you would not have stood there and said, "Hey, I cherish that." You would have hated it. You would have loathed it. But you and I have a great advantage over the eyewitnesses 2,000 years ago. For we know that this pre-planned death of Jesus Christ was the only way that you and I could ever be saved. So we say things like, we cherish the cross. We wear it as earrings and put tattoos on and necklaces and shirts and hang it all over. We have 3 behind us. For us, it's power. For us, it's cherished because we know the story. We know all that Jesus did for us and accomplished on the cross. So when Jesus said, "It is finished," I think for a long time I kind of felt like it was his life he meant. Like, "I'm done." But really, he meant so much more than that. You see, he came for all kinds of reasons. And a lot of the reasons are loved and cherished by us. We know that he came to reconcile us to God. He came to forgive us. He came to enable us to live for an eternity. He came to create a people passionate for him. He came to unleash the power of God. He came to be crowned with glory and many other reasons. But my favorite one is the one that he said. He said, "I have come to seek and save the lost." To seek them, and then when I find them, to save them. "That's why I came," he said. And that's what he did. So when he said, "It is finished," it was his purpose to seek and save the lost that he accomplished on the cross. Now we know that story. That's why for us, we can sing, "I'll cherish the old rugged cross." But if you stood there on that hill so many years ago, you would not have cherished that cross. You would have hated it. The bottom of your heart. So be amazed again today at the cross and all that happened that day. It's a story that's so familiar to us that sometimes we just roll through it. We don't even think about it again. But today, as we take communion in just a few minutes, I want you to go back and imagine what it would have been like to be on that hill for those hours, probably between 9 a.m. when they crucified him until about 3 p.m. when he died. What would it have been like?